Blog Talk Radio.
Somebody needs to set you down, tell you how things end. You're living on the dark side of what is. You're always talking, talking, ready for a fall. You got your reasons, but you don't believe them at all. You're acting like you're waiting on the sympathy vote. Tomorrow's Super Tuesday, and the people on the news say that you're sagging in the polls. That's how it goes. Destiny's a leaving gown, you're always running late. You tell her she was wonderful, but she'll just have to wait. Wait just like you waited when you waited for the call.
Gentlemen, this is a test flight of the good ship PNN. I think I have my good dear friend Miss Brooke and her happy yappy puppy in the background. So I'm guessing that you can hear me because I can certainly hear you. Oh, that's good news.
There we go.
Well, this is a test run because we've had some technical glitches in the system, and we're hoping to chase them out today. Brooke, you know, we've got a guy who gives thanks for himself as president, which is certainly a generous. Would you call that self-knowledge or just self-abuse? I forget.
Social abuse, for sure.
You know, I've had such an interesting rapprochement with American, I guess we're going to have to call it culture. The land of ice and snow, the good people of Iceland. One of the neatest questions I was asked while I was over there was by a young ticket taker who probably was in her mid to late 30s, maybe early 40s. Despite the fact that she was taking concert tickets and selling fine arts museum, she was just the most pleasant, smiling person. And she said, why is it that socialism is such a bugaboo for your people? And I didn't have to think about it. My answer, and I want to hear your answer, my answer was, my suspicion is that since the drumbeat from the right, literally World War II, was that socialism equals communism, communism equals tyranny, and oh my God, our royals might be in danger. So they've been beating this drum for a long time, and maybe our royals are in danger. I tend to think not. But what would you have answered when you were asked, why is socialism such a bugaboo when it's clearly in play?
Well, for some 40 years since the Powell memo, there has been a lot of money and a lot of energy poured in on the other side by the likes of, you know, the Malinskevs and the religious right, to undermine the idea that the people, that the grassroots, have a social interest. They want you to think that there's only a self-interest because they want all the social interest to themselves. And when I talk about social interest, I mean, you know, all the things that make civilization that we do together as people, you know, in the past, you know, it was to, you know, worship in various forms, but it's also served at the same time when it was doing that, it was serving to organize people into a larger project that had a greater meaning than just self-interest and just what's going on between people or gossip over the fence. And I think that as people, as a culture, we are impoverished when we don't have social interest, when we don't recognize social interest. And they knew damn well, the architects of the Powell memo, they knew damn well at the time that this would be the case, that we would wind up with complete alienation and, you know, people disengaging and so on and so forth. So to turn it around, I think we need a revival. We need as many people preaching the gospel of social interest as there are out there preaching the wealth gospel. And it should be just as passionate, and it's just as important, and it's, in my opinion, far more gospel-like to exalt something that is greater than oneself, than one's me or I or ego, but that all of us need to lift each other up.
You know, another comment this same woman made, which just really, really made me smile, despite the dark humor there in it. When I first walked over to the counter. Now, here we are, you know, we're this big cultural facility. Clearly, you know, she's a small cog in a big wheel. Clearly, she's not, you know, a terribly important person in the grand scheme of things. She's a ticket taker. But, you know, she's an intelligent person. And the first thing she says to me when I told her, I was interested in the price and the times and where to go. For a jazz concert in this lovely, just beautiful concert hall across the street from our hotel in Reykjavik. She looks at me for a moment and she says, I'm going to very carefully collect all the accurate information. And I thought, well, that's kind of belaying the obvious. And then she said, the zinger, because I know you're accustomed to being lied to.
Wow. That's
and I thought,
pretty
well, you
dark.
Know, it was really interesting because it, you know, clearly this is a woman who is, you know, obviously internationally aware of what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, clearly a person who is knowledgeable about world affairs and has an opinion she's not ashamed to share. And I'd like to think that she took a look at me and said, this is the guy that, you know, he can talk about it. What
yeah,
are the other?
Yeah, maybe there's some of that, but I think that there's a lot of interest in American culture in a lot of places in the world. And there always has been for different reasons. For pop culture and music and this and that. But I think right now, specifically with what we're going through and what Britain's going through with Brexit, is putting a lot of people on edge, you know, because we're superpowers and we could really screw things up for the rest of the folks. Likewise, Brexit could also end up being a net positive for many of the European countries that stayed within the European Union. So there's that, you know, there's a little bit of Schadenfreude, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, we're getting ready to crush you, stupid people, you know, with your stupid fake politicians that are telling you lies that you're believing and running away with all the money while you're bickering amongst yourselves about, you know, whatever it is that we bicker amongst ourselves on Facebook or Twitter.
Another really interesting exchange I had, I was on the boat, the ferry boat out to see Lady Liberty, which I presume Donald Trump doesn't know exists. And I'm on this ferry, and there's a charming outgoing woman behind the bar on this ship. And she overhears me talking to someone explaining that we were from Florida. And she goes, "You're from Florida." I said, "Yes, ma'am." She goes, "Can I ask you a question?" And clearly a feisty, you know, vivacious person. And I said, "Sure, you can." And we're both kind of, okay, where's this going next? And she goes, "I got to ask you, Scott DeSantis, what the hell is wrong with Florida?" And I really didn't have to wait a beat. And I said, "Corruption." And she laughed. Had to be for 3 minutes straight. She goes, "You know, of all the people I've ever asked, nobody said it straight out. You just said exactly what the hell. And no one has ever admitted it. I think you're right." And I said, I tell you what, I'm very involved in politics. I'm pretty sure of all the things you can say about Florida, corruption is certainly one of the strong ones."
Well, and studies have borne that out. Year after year, Florida appears at the top of many different corruption scales. You know, they look at different statewide and local governments, and there's ratings given for, you know, different, you know, who's more corrupt and who's less corrupt. Florida is always at the top of that list. And so is New York, by the way, which few people would look askance at. New York is going to have this reputation and being insiders with Wall Street and whatnot. But I think that people who live outside of Florida are somewhat blindsided when Florida comes up on that, you know, and I can imagine Europeans not kind of getting it, but our whole history of developing the state, you know, the way that land was taken from people and given to other people to make money off of and so on and so forth. The history of our state is a history of corruption.
Well, it was really interesting. And, you know, we heard one of the evenings we went to see the Northern Lights. And it was a retired physicist who gave us the tour and the lecture. And he was explaining, and people had questions for him about the socialized medicine in Iceland and what did he see as strengths and weaknesses. And he said, well, frankly, he said he's had several major operations, never spent a penny. At this particular moment, he said he was waiting for a cataract operation. He said, but because it's not life-threatening, because it's not critical right now, he's on a what's probably going to be a year-long hold until his number comes up for the operation. He said, but if I had an emergency today, I could go to any hospital anywhere and know that I would get the best care available and it wouldn't cost me a penny. And you could just hear, there were several people who had already identified themselves in one way or another as hardcore right-wing Republicans. And you could hear them kind of go, interesting, you know. Here was a real person, not some, you know, commie pinko, saying that, you know, they actually had a benefit from having socialized medicine, you know.
Yeah, I think that I think that we just have to change minds. You know, the first person at the ticket booth that you talk to who mentioned that we have a deficit of truth telling over here is right. And, you know, part of the reason why Medicare for All and ideas like that aren't even more widespread and more accepted, which they are off the charts, you know, 70-80% of Americans are in favor of fixing our healthcare system with a single payer solution. It's the people who are bought off. It's the corruption that keeps that from happening.
You know, here we've got DeSantis as a governor, it seems. And, you know, one of the things that crossed my mind was, you know, the DeSantis apologists who said, oh, you know, that was just a folksy turn of the phrase. When he said monkeying it up, he really wasn't making an African-American a comment. It was really just plain old folksiness. Brooke, I wanna have a bet with you right now. How long will it take till we see the sheet that the Hayes tried to conceal come out in full force? I think we're going to see the fact that this guy's a racist really within the first couple months.
Well, I think that activists will. I think that, you know, when you start becoming attuned to reading policy, you know, and, you know, like reading, like deconstructing, looking at, critiquing policy and the kinds of policy and the way that politics is put together, it's much easier to see institutionalized racism. Now, most people do not even understand the concept of institutionalized racism. Now, I doubt he's going to let his mask fall to the point where he has a verbal tick like that again. In this way, I think DeSantis is more composed. He has more composure than a Donald Trump. But look at the policy, and we'll be looking at the policy, and we'll be looking at, his, at the people that he surrounds himself with, and we'll be able to make that determination pretty damn quick. And it's not just the racism. These people are anti-science. They're, a death certificate for the environment. And, you know, really all that they stand for is taking as much public money as they possibly can and find ways to put it in the pockets of their cronies and themselves.
Yeah. Any other stories catch your eye this week?
Well, it's funny that you brought up these broader issues because for the last couple of days, I've been immersing myself. I've been a little bit self-indulgent with immersing myself in some just reading philosophy and linguistics and, you know, enjoying just some non-political stuff. So where we are in the zeitgeist, where we are in all of the stuff that's going on in politics and the change that we need to see is we are in the midst of a larger conversation that I think is very interesting. You know, I think that we're in the midst of a contradiction, you know, a contradiction in social terms where people cannot hold the beliefs that they've held in the past. Something has to give. And that's when some change can happen. I think what happened in the elections here in Florida, you know, so much came to light that people are shocked about. You know, like, you know, a lot of people didn't know that Brenda Snipes was appointed by Jeb Bush. You know, a lot of people didn't know the extent to which we have no real idea who's voting and if their votes are being counted. And even when there's recounts and hand recounts, in addition to machine recounts, still don't know if we have an accurate vote. It's still messed up. So I think that the over Thanksgiving, there were a lot of Floridians chewing through these bigger concepts. And I got to tell you, this Thanksgiving with the extended family, there wasn't any of that political, you know, kind of, you know, Trump people, you know, confronting Democrats or what do you think about this or what do you think about that in a confrontational way. There was much more, I felt, in my extended family, people were becoming more sophisticated in the way that they were consuming news and consuming ideas and so forth, and kind of softening their approach, you know, to the lefties in the family or whatever. So I don't know. I mean, I feel really hopeful kind of coming out of this week and going into the holiday season, not looking forward to Republicans being elected in Florida. But this is something we'll talk about on Sunday. There is a lot of politics going on behind the scenes now. It's things are really, really up in the air. Some things to talk about, that's going on in Florida.
Well, we have some really interesting guests joining us. A woman named Jane Bergman Johnson, an old friend of mine from concert days, actually worked a poll recount. So she's going to come and talk about her experience with the recount. And she was there in Broward County. So she has some interesting things to say about that. A teaser, it was more congenial than she was worried that it would be. So that was good news.
Interesting.
And we also have Edwin Enciso coming on, who's going to give us his.
What's he going to talk about?
He's going to talk about lessons we might learn.
Okay.
From this last election, what we managed to achieve and what we, let's say, underachieved. So that should be good. He always has some good, keen insights to tactics and all. So that should be interesting. And Janine is going to be talking about assimilation, good, bad, and ugly. We went to, as I told you, the Statue of Liberty and motored by Ellis Island and to visit those two shrines to immigrants in this Trumpian era was, really had some interesting resonances for me, being a grandchild of people that passed through Ellis Island. Immigration is not is quite a realistic experience for us. And so that was interesting. And, of course, as I say, also traveling out beyond the United States, we had an interesting interaction with the customs people coming out of Iceland. There was a botch, a problem on Linda's gate pass. And the security guard there was kind, pleasant, helpful, suggested where Linda might go. Because the rest of the process had been completely automated. We didn't even talk to a human except to have a human guide us which direction to go. All our baggage and sign in and all that was all done automatically. But when we came to the customs, there was humans there and her paperwork wasn't in order. So the guard very kindly, very gently in English suggested where she needs to go to get resolved. And then as Linda was leaving, the guard leaned over and said, "Listen, if you have any trouble at all, you come back and talk to me. I will go down with you. I'll walk you through the process. You'll be taken care of." And, we're both looking at each other like, oh, my God. Having gone through American customs where merely presenting all the appropriate paperwork got you was a scowl and a close eyeball examination. So, you talk about contrasts, It was really interesting. Any other thoughts from this past week as we wrap up for today's little test?
Well, mentioning immigration in Ellis Island reminded me of this really odd thing that it crossed everyone's radar seemingly out of nowhere. Earlier this week, Hillary Clinton said that
she
called on Europe's leaders to roll back immigration in order to stop right-wing populace. It's a very interesting article. One will probably, let's try to discuss this on Sunday, tomorrow.
You have to say, the woman certainly knows how to raise the wrong take on the wrong issue at the wrong time. Please,
I know,
side
right?
with the right. Okay, yes, side with the haters. There you go. Build, are you going to go with a bucket and mortar and go down to the border and help? Are you kidding? Does this mean she's lost her neoliberal status completely?
Well, there's a lot of thinkers who for many years have been pointing out that the neoliberals and neoconservatives have been on the same page. They just media doesn't pay attention to them at the same time. So we don't always see how that goes together. But, you know, taking this kind of statement and then looking back over, you know, Hillary Clinton's stint at the State Department, you kind of see the confrontation of neoliberalism and neoconservative, you know, policies being put out, you know, some more spectacular and explosive than others. But, you know, just the same, there's a lot of source material to go back and, you know, kind of think about.
Let me raise one more really complex, difficult question with, 5 minutes left to go. Did you hear the story about a Melania demanding the head of one of the advisors? Where the hell does that come from? My gut intuition is it's a human. She didn't like the way she flirted or something, because I can't imagine that Melania is part of any kind of policy discussion.
So I have a take on that.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, reading biographies of different administrations, you know, through history, oftentimes family members are, you know, sent on diplomatic missions in a kind of undercover way. So, you know, Melania went on, you know, the trip to Egypt and Middle East. You remember when she wore the pith helmet, you know,
right,
and dressed up like she was an archaeologist from the 1880s or something. You know, this is what, according to those stories, this is when the trouble started with that particular person, because they didn't want her to wander off from her detail during her trip out there. Well, what do you think is going to happen when somebody of that high a profile wanders off? She's not going to shop at Sephora. She's, you know, there's a whole world of other things that could be happening. And this person might have called her to the carpet on it and, you know, said, look, I don't know what she was up to, but she was trying to, you know, circumvent our security detail. That's important for us to know. You know, if I gotta tell you this, what better person to go stealth mode to do Trump's dirty work than Melania? Nobody expects Melania. Oh my God.
Or the Spanish Inquisition, I guess.
That makes them
well. Thank you so much, Brooke. I think we had a successful test today. I look forward to chatting with you tomorrow. Thank you so very much for this test run. And you have a wonderful evening. Happy Thanksgiving to you and all your wonderful family.
And you as well. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Thanks. Okay, bye-bye. So this has been Rick Spezak and the charming and talented Miss Brooke Hines, chatting you up on a test night here at PNN. Hope you enjoyed it. You should tune in. And we'll talk to you tomorrow at our normal time. So thanks a bunch. Talk to you soon. This was Rick. And let me say, on behalf of PNN, we'll see you tomorrow with the Voices of Activists every night. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Mr. Ryan and Mr. McConnell, do you think Appalachian women like me, with steel in our backbones, will yield? You are kidding yourselves if you think we will be turned around. Did you self-professed Christians not learn about Isaiah chapter 10? Woe to those who make unjust laws, to those who issue oppressive decrees to deprive the poor of their rights and withhold justice from the oppressed of my people, making widows their prey and robbing the fatherless. Woe unto them. Last night, the Senate voted to rob the working middle class and the working poor, the elderly, our children, students, and veterans, to further enrich the filthy rich and large corporations. These so-called Christians say they follow the teachings of Jesus. They do not. They worship at the altar of money and power and hold tight to the philosophy of Ayn Rand. They lie and say they worship at the altar of Christ. In fact, they kneel and bend their knees and kiss the rings of the Koch brothers and other billionaire donors who are hell-bent on smashing the 99%. Listen very carefully, Mr. Ryan, Mr. McConnell, and your greed-filled ilk. We, the people of the United States, are mobilizing. My sisters and brothers are rising up together to fight against the attack that you are giving to our people. And we will not yield until our people are free from the money changers and those who worship money and power. We, the people, see your tax scam for what it is, and we will overcome. Stay tuned, Paul and Mitch. We are coming for you.
Progressive News Network, a new Mercury Media production, where you'll find the voices of activists, the voices of those working to make this a better world. We believe that as we face challenging times, the human spirit can face and surmount the foolish and the short-sighted. Tune in every Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, for the live show, or anytime you can. Progressive News Network, found at www.newmercurymedia.com/PNN/. We have a future. Tune in and build it with us. Underwritten by Florida Media Labs, produced by Rick Spivak in cooperation with Canary and a Coal Mine Films. Progressive News Network.
Good night. See you next week. Actually, see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.